Welcome, everyone, to Trek Talk, Star Trek Talk Radio, episode number 2. I'm your co-host, Garen Gillum.
And I am your other co-host, John Alley.
Finally, getting like the Star Trek Discovery touch there, changing up our intro.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to try to keep it something a little bit different every time. I mean, we'll obviously have some repeats, but since this is episode 2 and we're getting closer to Discovery, I thought I'd pull a little bit of Discovery theme.
I like it.
Well, if that's the true Discovery theme, we don't know yet.
That is true. So we're back. We're for our entire listening audience. We apologize. I think we're a week late. We kind of attended to. We intend to do this on a bi-weekly basis, but unfortunately, due to sickness and scheduling,
it's my fault. Go ahead.
Yes, it's
my fault. So, yeah, this is the first time in a while that I've been able to talk without coughing. So,
you need to see your chief medical officer every year, or your physical.
I'll go see Dr. Boakai.
Oh yes, Dr. Boakai.
Yes.
He did cure you of your blindness.
True. And for those of you who are new, this is in regards to our FASA role-playing game.
John plays the captain, and the climax to our first adventure, not to go too far on the details, but our illustrious captain allowed himself to become blind. And but luckily, in the second adventure, player playing the chief medical officer made some good roles. Mm-hmm. And luckily, Captain McCloud was able to regain his eyesight.
Yes, yes. So, what else has been going on, Garen?
So I started my rewatch of The Next Generation it's probably been a couple months. You know, I'm lucky if I can get 2 or 3 episodes in a week.
Yeah.
So you figured 26 episodes. I finally completed that. And I'm 2 episodes into season 2. It's interesting. I haven't gone through TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager since I first watched them when they were on the air. Right, I've seen various episodes since then, but I have not actually done the complete rewatch. So it's kind of interesting to go back, particularly with the first season of TNG, which I'm pretty sure, you know, I definitely have not watched that all the way through since probably the 80s.
Oh yeah.
So.
And is your wife still watching it with you?
No, she's not watching that. We're still watching Enterprise, so we're in season 3 of Enterprise.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it was Enterprise that you two were watching together. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. So my, you know, kind of the thoughts that I have watching TNG, number one, the first thing that came to mind is strictly kind of a visual thing. I forgot how close the exterior sets, you know, the planet side sets.
Yeah.
Like they are so TOS like.
Oh yeah.
It's like, I mean, you could put Kirk and, you know, Spock and, you know, and the others on those sets and they'd fit right in.
Especially especially the episode where they introduced the Ferengi, which
yes.
was which I can't remember. The Last Outpost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was bad. And I think the same set was used for the episode where Tasha died.
Oh, yes.
Because those two, like, almost cringeworthy. And especially with the remastered high def version.
It's weird though. I kind of had almost a nostalgic feel, almost as if okay. I mean, in a way, it felt kind of connected to TOS just because of the planet side sense. You know, it had a weird, just kind of connective tissue to the TOS, which I hadn't remembered since watching it, in terms of the sets and even the interior, even like planet side interior sets as well. I think had a lot of similarity with TOS, a little more detailed, but very similar. You know, like the planet side sets. You know, this is of course before CG. You basically had the set. You know, the background sky was like a lit, basically the studio wall lit with, lit up. You
Change
know, and that.
the color filter, you have another planet.
Exactly. Oh, that was a visual right off the bat. And then, the show definitely took a while to find its way. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
really, the entire first season, it hadn't found its way yet.
And that's the way with most series because the writers and the actors they're all trying to find their characters, and the writers have to learn to write for those characters. But yeah, I remember watching the first episode of back in the 80s of The Next Generation, and it was like, this isn't Kirk and Spock. I mean, who it's like, who is this old guy yelling on the bridge? But Buddy grew on me, and actually now, Picard's right up there with Kirk, in my opinion.
I kind of I remember I actually do remember watching, like, sitting down and watching the first, the pilot of TNG when it came out, and I definitely was disappointed because I would say my least favorite type of episodes of TOS were I guess you would say that the godlike characters, the almost omnipotent, antagonist character, like, from, Squire of Gothos, Apollo from Who Mourns for Ananias,
Yes.
and, many, many others. That was kind of a Star Trek trope. That was never really wasn't my thing. And of course, in Encounter at Farpoint, you had that same type of character in Q. Now, I did grow to like Q because, John DeLancey is just, the guy is just great.
Oh yeah, he was just so over the top. I mean, it was like, well, he was supposed to be a one-time character, and but he was so popular they kept bringing him back.
Yeah, and he developed a really nice arc with Picard, and they were just, it ended up turning out well, but for the first episode, that wasn't, my favorite. It did have some good elements in it. The Enterprise, the bridge separation segment, and some things, but I guess if I were to pick out my favorite episode, it would have to be, let me bring up the list again. It's the Worf episode, Heart of Glory.
Oh yeah.
So
That was
that's the...
that's where they find the derelict Klingon ship, is that correct?
Yep.
Yep.
He's got three Klingons on board, and we come to find out that they were renegade Klingons. They were basically, they were rebelling against the alliance, with the Federation, and because they felt that the Klingon society had been, I guess, watered down, I guess, due to that alliance.
Yeah. Sorry. I was getting a little clicking sound in the audio, so I had to see what was causing that.
No worries.
Yeah, we're good.
I guess like that one to me kind of had, I guess looking back on it, that one was kind of a, I guess, kind of hearkening towards things to come, even though of course they wouldn't have known that at the time. But I just like it reminded me of kind of okay, here's kind of storyline and kind of the characterization, and then it's the war story of kind of the things that came, few years later in the show.
Yeah, it was the beginning of actually, I guess, kind of defining further the Klingon culture.
Yep, exactly. The other one that I thought was good, or at least elements of it, were The Big Goodbye,
Oh, yeah.
which was essentially the first, I guess we call it the holodeck episode. They did, of course, introduce the holodeck before that episode, but this was the first one where, it was a major, it was the A story in the episode. Where Picard, uses it to create the Dixon Hill, his favorite detective fiction, Dixon Hill, novel. But I enjoyed that one, and particularly the very end of it. Again, this kind of hints at things to come, and just kind of the storylines I think that would come later. They touch a little bit on artificial intelligence in that episode at the very end. So it's where they're basically cornered by the head mob guys, and there's the rush from the crewmen outside to get into the holodeck, get them out of the situation, and they finally get the doors open. The mobsters try to leave, and then they are immediately, as they go through the door, they dissolve because they're just, holograms. But then Dixon Hill's character, Picard's, he has a friend. He's a detective in the police department, and he sees all this happening, and then when so everyone else leaves, and then Picard's ready to go, and the other character, he says, something to this effect, Dix, when you leave here, will I still exist? And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he had kind of attained self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see why that one's on your list of favorites, because it combines two of your favorite genres, Star Trek and like 50s
Oh
detective.
yeah,
So
that's right. You remember that?
yeah.
I am touched. Yes, you remember. Yes, I do like my other. I'm really big into detect, noir fiction, 30s and 40s specifically, 50s. So, yep.
Oh yeah, I had to look back. I mean, I'm kind of got stuck on season three, but I started with the original series. I'm working my way through the entire all the series, and but yeah, I think looking back on season one, I think my favorite was probably Data Lore. I mean, it introduced gave a little bit more
Okay.
back a little bit more background on Data, where he came from, that there were others like him, or at least one other. And then it also introduced the crystalline entity.
Yep. No, I would put that one up in the top handful of definitely the first season. Yep. I like, def the ones that kind of explored new territory and or filled in some background of the characters. So, Data Lore and Heart of Glory was similar for Worf in that aspect. So, as far as a worst episode, I think that's pretty easy. It'd have to be Skin of Evil.
Skin of
I
Evil.
just, that was the one when Natasha was killed
Yeah.
by the oil slick.
Yes, that.
The oil slick being.
Well, the hefty bag in the oil slick.
Yes. Oh gosh.
I think not only was that like one of the worst episodes, but that was also one of the worst villains.
Yes, it was painful. You know, gosh, there was, well,
and especially such a pivotal role. I mean, it was the first time a main character, was killed on the episode.
Yeah, I know. That's right. Yeah, I mean, geez, there's so many other ways that she could have gone down, fighting, if you will. But I guess they did address that in was it third or fourth season with Yesterday's Enterprise, when Tasha Yar was brought back.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so that was my rewatch of the first season of TNG. Moving on to second season. Looking forward to till I can get to season 3, 4 when things really start to pick up and get good.
Oh, it's already getting better because the Riker's beard has made its appearance.
That is true. But boy, I have to tell you, season 2 did not have a good start, man. I don't know what they were doing during the summer between the two, but oh man, the episode where Silence has Lise, I think that's the worst episode so far that in the rewatch. That's the one with Nagilium, or that just, oh gosh.
Oh, I can't remember that one.
They're investigating this thing. I guess it's kind of like a black hole. And they decide to, they're looking into it, and then they get pulled into it, and it's basically there's this alien entity, again, another kind of all powerful entity, kind of playing with them. He wants to learn about humans' interactions and how they deal with death and so forth.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. Now it's coming back to me.
It's just really bad in terms of the characterization, the way the characters talk to each other, how they act. Mm-hmm. It's horrible. It said the second episode with Dr. Pulaski, she calls Data it.
Oh, doctor, she does that through her entire.
Oh yeah,
I never. I'm sorry for the Pulaski fans out there. I can never like Pulaski because of the way she treated Data.
I know. It's horrible. It's just the alien Nagilium is just a silly looking ridiculous thing on the view screen. It's just bad. That's by far, I think that's the worst episode in TNG so far in my rewatch.
Well, yeah, there's one episode that it's a crusher heavy episode where she goes back home. I can't remember something. La Rosa or something like that.
Oh, Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa, yes.
It's a planet. I don't think it's Earth, but it's a planet. But it's we're colonized by her relatives.
There's that ghost that with.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Anyway.
All right. I think it's time to bring up Federation News Service, Joe.
Okay.
This report has been brought to you by the Federation News Service.
Okay. Federation News Service. So the first news item is a bit of a sad one. It actually just came up today, a couple hours ago. Not directly Star Trek, but of course, I think anything space program related is related to Star Trek. Today, Gene Cernan, the astronaut, he was actually the last astronaut who walked on the moon, passed away today at the age of 82 or 83.
I think it was 82. I saw it pop up a couple times on my news feed. I think it was 82.
Yep. He was born in 1934. He had three daughters. He was a former I believe he was a Navy captain. Yes, he was a retired U.S. Navy captain. Of course, he was a pilot. And he was part of the Gemini missions, okay, which was the second main program after the Mercury, and then of course went on to Apollo. He was the commander of the last mission, the last lunar mission, and was actually the last human to set foot on the moon.
Yep, it's sad. I mean, all the great things those men and women of the space program have done, and it seems like we've dropped the ball on what they started.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty sad that, you know, you've got astronauts that are passing away in their 80s that did all of these things 40, 50 years ago, and we literally do not have a spacecraft that can put an American in orbit right now.
Right.
That's sad. So, remembering Gene Cernan, last man to walk on the moon.
Okay. In direct Star Trek news, I mean, kind of after that, everything else seems, you know, kind of, I don't know, trivial. But
we can say that, hey, these are the guys that kind of path, you know, they set the path and. The good thing that came out of Star Trek and those, you know, those early astronauts were, I think, you know, the astronauts from today were inspired both by the early days of NASA and a lot of them have admitted to being inspired by Star Trek. So, that's a happy note.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in Star Trek Discovery news, it came out that it is set to begin filming on January 24th. And as we talked about last episode, we talked about the casting. And so we're getting closer.
We are getting closer. Yeah, and they're filming this in Canada. I believe it's Toronto. Yeah, Toronto.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Usually when talk about television shows, it's either British Columbia, I think, or Georgia. a lot of the TV shows, like The Walking Dead, and I can't remember what other ones. Yeah, Georgia is a big state for filming that. And
I didn't know. I knew more and more TV shows have been used in Canada recently.
Yeah.
Several years.
Yeah, Stargate was SG-1 was filmed up in Canada. Smallville was filmed up in Canada.
Yeah, actually, and the news item wasn't released by CBS. It was released. I guess it was picked up from a website based in Toronto that lists all of the current productions within its jurisdiction. Details of a production called Green Harvest recently appeared with filming dates, and the list of producers are Brian Fuller, Heather Kading, Gretchen Berg, Aaron Harbart, so basically the people that we know are in the production team of Discovery. So that's
what was the name of it?
The code name is Green Harvest.
Wait, wasn't Star Wars Blue Harvest or something like that? Yes.
You're right. I wonder if that's if they use that as a nod to that.
I don't know, probably.
That's kind of cool. But anyway, yeah, so it's in production. That's kind of cool.
It will be in about another week.
Yeah. As of this taping of this podcast, it's the 16th. Yeah, so it's about 8 days from now.
All right. So they begin in filming on January 24th. I want to see the uniforms. Come on, people.
They got to show us something. Yeah. It's going to be pretty exciting over the next few months. There's got to be stuff coming out. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned uniforms. I don't think, you know, we did kind of go into Discovery on the first episode of the podcast. I don't remember if I brought this up. We did talk about the uniforms, but what do you think the insignia is going to be? Are they going to be hardcore and go back to the TOS style where each ship had its own insignia, or are they going to just go with the arrowhead because it's so familiar to people as Star Trek?
So what are you saying? Are they going to go like Prime Universe, or are they going to go Kelvin timeline?
Well, yeah. Yeah, you make a good point. Right, because – and we'll get to this more later in the show. So the, but, yeah, you're right.
In well, I Kelvin, mean, they said it's the prime timeline. So I would hope they would go with like in each individual ship having its own insignia, but –
I hope they do. I just
my gut's telling me that they're going to go with the arrowhead. They're going to make that the Starfleet emblem.
I tend to agree. I mean, I have to like that. I think that symbol is so recognized as Star Trek that they probably will do that. Although I will be pleasantly surprised if they don't.
Well, look at it this way. They've put it on the teasers already. I mean,
that is true.
The teaser shows the Delta Shield, so.
Yes. Well, I mean, you could say that that's the symbol of Star Trek, not necessarily within the world itself, the show. They may still. You know what? It would be cool also. I would give them a pass if they at least went back and used so the Starfleet insignia and the TOS. There was a Starfleet insignia, but it wasn't the arrowhead. It was the, I don't know what you would call it.
It kind of looked like a daisy.
A daisy?
Yeah, it kind of looked like a flower with a bunch of petals around. That's
No. That was the Starbase insignia.
Oh, I see. I thought that was Starfleet Command.
No, the Starfleet Command is the little V-looking thing that's on the side of the Enterprise.
Yeah, but nobody wore that. Yeah, but nobody wore that on their uniform.
No, but it was actually in the background on a couple admiral when they were speaking to admirals. It appeared in the background. So, because that was on the ships, I'd assume that was actually the Starfleet insignia.
You're right. But yeah, that is. I mean, I think it was even on like some of the wall decorations on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they use that, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully, within the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting some teasers.
We'll see. All right.
So what else? Yeah. What else do we have in news?
So there's been some movement around Axanar, the Axanar lawsuit. So I read through this a bit. I'm a complete novice here, but I guess in civil lawsuits there's a process that's called summary judgment, where essentially both sides appeal to the judge to say, look, this is ridiculous. You should discontinue the trial and rule in our favor. The judge did not agree to do that. The case is going to go to a jury trial. However, which what appears to be a big blow to Axanar as the defendants is that the judge did rule that they cannot use fair use as a defense.
Oh.
So. but he didn't. You know, he's still sending it to trial, and it's at that point it's still up to the jury to make the decision on whether the main. Thrust of the case from the CBS and Paramount is going to meet its burden.
Yeah, I'm not seeing this boding well for fan films. And
it may not bode well for Axanar. I don't know about fan films.
That's true because Star Trek continues. Is still filming new episodes?
Yeah,
and they're not having any issues, and they're doing what, 40, yeah. 45 minute long episodes. So I don't know what it is with Axanar specifically. I mean, I loved everything. I mean, I donated to the Kickstarter and all that. But yeah, it just seems like CBS Paramount is going after Axanar with a vengeance.
Yes. Yep. So we'll see how that plays out. It's actually supposed to go to a trial, I think, at the end of January. So so we'll continue to follow that. Let's see. Anything else in the news? Yes. Quick note on IDW Comics. So they completed the arc, the four-issue arc for Star Trek Boldly Go, which is the Kelvin timeline ongoing comic. Wrapped up the Borg arc in issue number 4, which, Jen, you have not read.
No, I have not. I still haven't read issue 2 yet. So I need to go to my local comic shop and pick up the 3 and 4.
So issue number 5 looks like it's going to be a one shot that focuses on the backstory of Jayla from Star Trek Beyond. So and then I believe it may show her going into the academy. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, I think it was issue one that when Scotty was teaching at the academy, she was actually in the audience. So.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember that.
Along with the students from the miniseries Starfleet Academy.
Have you read that series?
Yeah, I have read some Star Trek comics.
I can check that out.
Just behind on Boldly Go.
Now I have to say, you're behind. You need to get up speed, man, so we can actually talk about this stuff on our podcast.
Well, yeah, but it's still a little bit early because you know spoilers.
Spoilers now. Listen, we got to do our stuff here.
Oh
man.
Yeah, but some people
4 months old.
Some people wait for some people wait for the graphic novel that combine the story arc. So,
oh, we're not doing that. Oh, yeah.
screw those people.
I have to say that the gentleman who, well, I mean, the writing is great. I mean, Mike Johnson has been doing these for, I don't know, probably 10 years now. I have to say the IDD comics are probably the best comics ever produced. The gentleman who does the art, his last name is Chastain. Don't have his first name in front of me at the moment. I'm trying to find the page with the credits on here, and it's not on the first page. But
I don't have mine handy.
Mr. Chastain is this guy's a master. I mean, like he draws the actor and you know likenesses just so good. It's just really good artwork. It's really like it's almost like it definitely you feel like you're watching a movie or the series. But anyway, good stuff. If you haven't checked those out, IDW Comics, they have the license for the Star Trek comics, and they're putting out great stuff.
Yep. Actually, there's a couple months, there's a Star Trek, we talked about it last one, where it's like kind of like the What If series, where the...
Deviation.
Yeah, where the Romulans... Yeah. Make first contact instead of the Vulcans. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yep.
It's kind of like alternative history for Star Trek because, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the other thing, too, is they're going to be doing a Discovery comic as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there's also set to be a kind of like a prequel novel, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, Did you listen to the official Star Trek podcast?
No, I have
the
not.
Latest episode?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. I mentioned that because Jordan Hoffman interviewed David Mack, who is the author who's writing the first Discovery novel that you mentioned there.
Okay. No, I've read quite a few of his Star Trek novels, and he's a really good author. So
it's good. Yeah, he's really good. You've read the Vanguard books, right?
I've read up the first four, and then I
okay.
Yeah, so. And I think there was two more after that. I think there was the Vanguard Declassified and one other I haven't read.
I read the main series, but not the Declassified.
Okay.
So, so yeah, that's gonna be cool.
Actually, I'm looking.
All oh, right.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at my bookshelf right now, and I've read the first five.
Okay. I forget how many there were. There might only be five. Maybe it's five or six.
I think there were six. There were six plus the Declassified, which was kind of like a anthology from different authors.
I got to check that out. So, yeah, it was a pretty good interview. Basically, the whole show was an interview with him. So,
okay, I'll have to catch that.
Yep. They talk a lot about, oddly enough, that there's a they talk a lot about about Rush, the band.
Oh, really? All Rush, all the time.
Yeah, both of them are apparently huge Rush fans. So, if anyone is interested in Rush and Star Trek, check out the official Star Trek podcast latest episode. Anyway, let's. I think it's time to move on to the next segment. What do you think there?
All right. Well, I think it sounds good.
The third rule clearly states, never spend more for an acquisition than you have to.
All right. We are moved to Quark's Bazaar, which this is where we talk about new products coming out that we're interested in.
So I had on our show notes to review Boldly Go 1-4. Of course, we can't do that yet, but
because he has on them. Have you read them yet?
Yes.
No, I have not.
That's our Google Doc script right now. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess it's not new, but I thought maybe we could talk about the Eagle Moss ships because number one, they're pretty cool. Number two, you have the subscription.
Yes.
I don't have the subscription, although I have been buying a couple ships individually.
Yeah, because so. For those who don't know, Garen is a stickler for scale. If it's not to scale, Garen doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
I what can I say? You're 100% right. I mean, it's a mod. Here's the kicker. I mean, they're really nice. I mean, for the money, they're pretty nice. They're called models. They're fully assembled, however. But geez, if you're a model, you got to have the scale. I mean, they don't even tell you the scale.
That's true.
That kind of bugs me.
That's true.
But
I don't know if in the magazine if they tell you the scale or not. I have 11 through the subscription, and then I bought the special, I guess it was the special 50th anniversary. It was the SS Yorktown, which was going to be the original name of the Enterprise, and it's NCC 1717. It's not canon, but I thought it was cool to have the ship, the Yorktown.
It's the apocryphal starship.
Yes, but no, it... I have them all in a glass display, and the detail on them is amazing. The nacelles are made out of like a clear acrylic blue and red on most of them. That when the light hits them, they almost look like they're glowing. So yeah, and actually I love my Federation ships, but the Klingon Katinga. I believe,
yeah,
it's a class. For some reason, that one I love that ship. It's like my favorite Klingon ship that I've received so far. That's a
classic design. So the Katinga, so it's based, it's the movie era Klingon ship, right?
Yeah, I believe it's the one from the motion picture.
I have to, yeah, I agree. That's I mean, that's the classic Klingon ship, and I think it's still the best looking one. You're right on that.
Although,
yeah, so they've been actually, yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that. I had all my stuff down in like the den, and I've created my Geekatorium up here, and I cannot find the binder and like my first five issues of the magazine that comes with them, and I can't find it anywhere. So it's like I'm really like bummed out about that, because I'm almost ready to cancel my subscription because I don't have the magazine.
Oh, damn, dude. I wonder if you check eBay, man. Maybe someone's got.
I know you can buy the binders, but man, I probably should just contact Eagle Moss, because I mean, I've had to call their customer service once, and I read online a lot of bad mouthing about the customer service, but I gotta say, the one time I had to call them, I had a great experience. I received my USS Reliant, and you could tell it was broken before I even opened it. The nacelles had broken off, and so I called up customer service right after, the same day I received it, and they said, "Oh, well, we'll send you out a new one immediately, expecting about 15 days," which I got it in 15 days. I asked them, "Will you send me like a slip to send this one back?" I said, "Don't worry about it." So, yeah, the customer service is great with so far that I've experienced. So,
you know, you can take that broken Reliant and turn it into the Reliant after it gets a pounding by the Enterprise, and perfect too, because they do actually blow off on the cell.
Oh, that's true. That's true. put some scorch marks on the hull.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Trek the Yards web series, they had the main guy from Eagle Moss that runs that line on an episode they just released, I think, today.
Oh, okay.
So
just like the comics I'm behind on all my podcasts.
So it's an England-based company, which, yeah, I didn't realize.
Yes. Yeah. And they're also coming out with Eagle Moss is coming out with a graphic novel subscription that has like the classic comics and the newer IDW comics. And what's cool about it is the binding, the spines of the book, when you put them on your shelf, it makes a collage of like the different ships and stuff. I believe it's a ships. I believe it's a ships. I'll have to look it up again. But yeah, when all the spines are together, it makes a like a collage picture.
Now that I would invest in that. Yeah. So from what I understand, they're going to publish, republish in that collection every single Star Trek comic. Let me revise that. There are war comics that were produced in other countries, specifically England. I'm not sure if it'll include those, but I think definitely all the U.S. produced comics, starting with Gold Key, through Marvel, DC, and then up to the present day. Oh, I think they're going to be. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was something I would like to get, but I don't think I could afford both the Starship subscription and the comic subscription.
So they apparently, he said they're up to about 90 ships now. They produce about 90.
I believe so, and at this rate, I don't think I'll ever get them all. Because some are even back. Some are back ordered, but so far they've done a good job of. I think they have a system that they keep track of the ones they've sent you. And like I was supposed to receive the Enterprise D dedication plaque, but it's on back order, and they sent a printed IOU to let you know that they haven't forgot it. Once it comes in stock, they'll send it.
That's cool. Yeah, they're definitely nice. But so I've got In my Geekatorium upstairs, I have the Enterprise D and the Excelsior, which are about the same scale. But I can't. The Reliant that I bought has to be downstairs. I can't have that next to the other two because it's the scales. So I'm hoping once you get the TMP Enterprise refit, that you're gonna let me know whether or not that's in scale with the Reliant, and it better be.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I mean, like, so far I've got the Reliant, the Yorktown, Excelsior, the NX-01, USS Thunderchild, the Enterprise D, and Voyager. Those are the Federation ships I have. And, like, the NX-01's about the same size as the D, so that would drive you nuts.
That would drive me. I couldn't handle it. I would go nuts.
I'm gonna have to put a barrier around it, like for when you come visit. So
I'm gonna look at that and get all spun up and go nuts. All right. Well, yeah. So that's the Eagle Moss. We'll post the link in the show notes if you want to check those out.
Okay.
I think that was it for Quark's Bazaar.
Yeah. Wanna go ahead and move on to the holodeck.
Cue up the holodeck.
All right. I'll start that program right now.
Program complete. Enter when ready.
Ah, I love to hear that sound, the holodeck. It just makes me think recreation.
Oh, yeah.
Games. Exploring our wildest fantasies within our imaginations.
Which, in our case, it's playing role-playing games in the Star Trek universe.
Yes. So we finished out. So we're playing two games, as we mentioned before. So we're playing the classic FASA Star Trek, the role-playing game, which came out in the 1980s. I am game mastering that. Our other game is the playtest, the official playtest of Modiphius' Star Trek Adventures. That is the company that has won the license for the role-playing game in the present day. So, yeah. You know what? Did you see the email? Check your email today. They actually just released the playtest, the next version of the playtest rules.
Oh no, I haven't. I haven't checked my email.
And they include rules for Starship Combat. So I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm interested in that also because, I mean, like, you and I play Star Trek Attack Wing, but I'm curious how they're going to do the starship battles with actual crew.
I agree. Yeah, is it going to have, like, a crew, you know, where you basically, so, like, each bridge officer maybe can, you know, actually role play during the combat? That would be kind of cool. Or will it be more tactical in nature? I think it's probably the former, because I remember in the one interview with Chris Birch, who's the president of Modiphius, he mm-hmm. said that, you know, basically, you know, if you want to play Star Trek, you know, if you want to do Starship Combat, the full on version, then you can just basically bring out Attack Wing.
Yeah.
And play that. So it's probably going to be a simplified version, more of a role play type of thing, but we'll find out. And speaking of Star Trek Attack Wing, we did have a session there. It would be appropriate to go over that.
Oh, you mean how I spanked you in that game?
Yeah, you did.
We had done other Starship combat games, particularly we did the FASO version where Garen, we never finished it, but I could tell how it was going to go. You were annihilating me, but no, it was Attack Wing's fun. And like next time you'll be the Federation.
You got your just revenge.
Yes.
You had the, so it was the, you had the Reliant and the Enterprise, I believe, right?
Yes, the TMP version of the Enterprise.
And I had a D7 or Katinga class, the classic Klingon cruiser, and also a Bird of Prey, the Brielle class, I believe. And yeah.
And I had my captains were I had Kirk for the Enterprise, obviously, and I had Captain Terrell for the Reliant, and they both performed admirably.
I think I only had one character captain. The other was a generic. I think I had Gork. I think Gorkon was one of my captains.
Yeah, you had Chancellor Gorkon.
I couldn't afford Chang or any of the others. Yes. So
next time we'll have to up the fleet numbers.
It was a lot of fun though. Yeah. So as far as the Star Trek role playing game, we kicked off a new adventure. The intrepid crew of the USS Endeavor are temporarily assigned to Starfleet Intelligence Command for a mission along the Klingon Federation border, and specifically to look into the disappearance of a Starfleet operative who has gone missing after he supposedly had picked up some Klingon intelligence.
Basically, my Captain McCloud has been demoted, so he's not even in command of this mission because of his actions in the previous mission are being under review by Starfleet Command. The brass has to waste time and resources. I mean, I could have just let both ships be taken over by the Flying Pancakes, but but no, to save my crew and the crew of the USS Republic, I blinded myself in order to save the ship.
Did you do that as a gallant action, or did you just forget to close your eyes?
Forgot to close my eyes when they turned on the. the high intensity UV.
Luckily, during the second adventure, there was some time during the travel from the from that area space to the new Starbase 2, your new assignment. You were able to. Well, actually, no. Actually, the Dr. Boakai botched the operation during the
butchery.
Yes. Yeah, so we were still on board the Endeavor traveling to Starbase 2, and Dr. B attempted an operation on board and botched it.
Yeah.
Luckily, when you got to Starbase 2, they had facilities that were able to repair your eyesight.
Yeah. Luckily, I succeeded in a luck roll where it didn't cause any further damage.
Well, actually, what was even much more impressive is when the Endeavor was doing docking operations at Starbase 2, Captain McCloud decided he would command a manual docking operation with Starbase 2, even though he was quite blind.
Yeah, well, I mean, my helmsman actually performed the maneuver.
But you gave the order.
I just gave the order. Hey, it almost took out a worker bee.
It's most impressive. I think that will be it will counteract the issues that you're having, Captain.
Yeah.
With the other. The board review of your actions during the previous mission.
I'm sure it will.
Yes, you were demoted. I was really I think I so I forgot to do it. I wanted to have a scene where it was a callback to the motion picture where where your character was. So you got the news from the Commodore, the Starbase commander, Commodore Shia, was told you about your reduction in rank. And I wanted to end that with something like, report to your duty station, commander. a la the conversation in TMP when Kirk gives the news to poor Decker that he was demoted. I always felt bad for Decker.
Yeah, yeah. Kirk did. That was a. Excuse the language. That was a dick move on Kirk's part. He recommended him for the position, then took the rug out from underneath him.
I know. That was so messed up. Kirk. Yeah. All right. So, yes, yeah, so we're starting a new mission, and we will report back on future episodes of the podcast on how that's going.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to talk. You know, get into our main topic of discussion, which we call Hailing Frequencies Open. John, do you wish to do the honors?
I will go ahead and, actually, Picard will do the honors.
Hailing Frequencies. Great. Open.
Okay, it's all you, man.
All right. All right. So, so we'd like to talk about. We alluded to this in the first episode, you know, the Kelvin universe. So, we wanted to take about 20 minutes here, you know, just to kind of talk about our thoughts on, you know, JJ's, reinvigorating the franchise with the 2009 movie and the two that came after. Kind of our feelings on that.
I pretty much had good feelings until I spent time talking to you about it.
I think I did that with Rogue One too.
Yes, you did. But actually, after thinking about it, you were wrong on a couple of those points on Rogue One.
Okay. We need to get
that. We'll talk about that offline. But
So I guess my thoughts on this in general, I kind of want to separate out my feelings on. I give props to J.J. Abrams and the entire, you know, the writers and the production crew for number one. Look, they brought back Star Trek. It was pretty much dead after, you know, Enterprise was canceled after four seasons. Star Trek was really in a low point. So, look, from the perspective of bringing back Star Trek and getting it out to a wider audience, you know, I'm all for that. I'll give them props on that. You know, I've got some issues with the storyline and some things, but I have to say, really, that the problems I have with the movies are probably, you know, you could call it more nerdy, geeky, if you will.
Has to do a scale, everybody. Has to do a scale.
Yes, the scale does come into it, unfortunately. But hey, this is a Star Trek podcast, so. We are here to get all things geeky and nerdy.
Right.
I'll just go through my – you want to hit the what we like about it first or what we don't like first?
Let's end on a positive note. Let's do what we don't like first.
Okay.
And then end on a positive note with what we do like.
All right, I'll go. You want me to go first? Yeah. Or you like to go?
You go ahead. I've got to look something up real fast.
Okay. All right. So my thoughts on the first movie, Star Trek 2009, the things that stuck out that I did not like, or I guess it's Star Trek to me is, you know, it's number okay, it's science fiction, it's grounded in reality. Or not reality, but things, you know, science fiction are things that can be it's separated from fantasy in the sense that there could be an explanation for the technology and the events that happen. you know, you could argue that in, you know, many Star Trek episodes, they may go kind of beyond that more, maybe touching more in the realms of, you know, fantasy. But in particular, also with the characters, the setting and the characters kind of having some believability, and with Kirk being, you know, my favorite character in all of Star Trek. I had my biggest problem with the first movie was Kirk being promoted to captain of the Enterprise before he even, I think it was, he took temporary command before he graduated. And then I guess then he graduated. And so you basically got a captain. This would be equivalent to a Navy captain, you know, in the U.S. Navy. Like, someone being made captain of the flagship of the Federation out of Starfleet Academy, you know, this is just, it just, I can't wrap my head around that.
Well, that's what did happen, but they kind of gave the reasoning why that happened. Well, I think there was other people available because, you know, Starfleet's a big organization, even though a majority of the ships were destroyed over Vulcan. They could have restaffed the ships with more experienced personnel, I think.
There had to be someone else out there. I mean, even the other officers of the Enterprise were senior to Kirk because they were already, you know, they were already officers serving. He was look, Kirk, great. You could, you know, I call him the best Starfleet officer ever, but he's not a superhero. You know, and I can't get by that unrealistic portrayal of the character, the situation. It just that bugs me. What else? Again, just strictly from, you know, I guess tying into Star Trek canon and, you know, the technology and the ship designs. I don't really like the design of the Enterprise in those movies. I can deal with it, though. I think the specifics are really what throws me off. Number one would be I don't like the Star Wars-esque feel to the weaponry and the space battles. Again, it goes back to that realism. You know, in Star Trek, you know, the phasers were beam weapons, right? I mean, it was a solid beam, mm-hmm. which is more realistic, you know. But instead, they used the Star Wars, you know, pulse type, where each is how do you have an individual bolt of light? That just doesn't make any sense. I can deal with it in Star Wars because that's fantasy. Star Wars is fantasy,
right? Right. But,
and Star Trek, it just really gets me. I mean, not only that, I think it's not as visually impressive. I think the straight beam, continuous beam, is I like that better, but just not realistic. And then I don't like the interior of the Enterprise. They use, you know, infamously use the beer. What do you call it?
The breweries.
Brewery for the engine room, but yeah. Oh boy,
I hated that engine room even in the second movie when they got the showing the warp core. I just, that's one set that I did not like. And then the thing was, speaking of that, when it looks like they're in the engine room looking for Uhura to help translate, you know, the message she received, it's like they're in the engine room and there's just like desks. Like, the design didn't make sense. Why is a communications officer like down in the belly of the ship? That just never made sense to me.
And of course we do. I wouldn't be me if I didn't mention just the huge problems with the scales of the ships in those movies. I mean, number one, the Enterprise itself had multiple scales depending on, you know, the director's whim and what they wanted and what they wanted to show on screen.
Right.
And, you know, I guess those are the biggest problems I have with it. I guess that, you know, I do initially, John, I thought it was clever to have this idea where they within the universe itself, they had an explanation for the reboot, and that, you know, in universe, you know, the incident with the Narendra, is that right?
Narada.
And Spock coming, you know, what Spock did, that caused the deviation in the timeline. Okay, initially I thought that was kind of clever, but it there are still problems with tying into the prime timeline that don't make sense. And as I think about it now, I kind of wish they had just done a traditional revisioning reboot of Star Trek such that we don't have to even worry about the prime timeline, so to speak, and existing canon. It's just 100% itself a reboot and a revision, and we can take it on its own. So and in hindsight, I think it was a mistake that they actually tried to tie it into the prime timeline.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's been a few years, so I'm pulling all this out of memory. That originally, I think that instead of the USS Kelvin, they were going to have the Enterprise meet the Narada, and the Narada destroys the original Enterprise. But Paramount had a stipulation telling JJ that you can't destroy the Enterprise. And which would, I think if they would allow that and had the Enterprise look, because I mean, I think it would have still been around the time of Captain April would have been the captain around that time.
Yeah.
And if they had April in command of the Enterprise and it looked more like the Enterprise, yeah, the original Constitution class.
Yeah.
And destroyed, and then, you know, they, to fight the Narada, they built another class, named it the Enterprise A. I think that would have been, I think that would have helped the story just a little.
So how, I hadn't heard that, so that, how is that would have worked? So the Enterprise would have been destroyed, so how would that have altered the timeline such that there would be an Enterprise in the new timeline?
Well, they would have had to, with the knowledge of the advanced weaponry of the Narada, it would explain why they upscaled the size of the ships.
Oh, okay. So they would have rebuilt the Enterprise then?
Yeah, rebuilt it, but with more advanced weaponry and whatnot. So I think that's... But, and that article could have just been fan stipulation, but I do know that Paramount did put the stipulation that they could not destroy the Enterprise in the movie.
Well, that's interesting, because of course in Beyond they did destroy the Enterprise.
Well, yeah, so. But this was like the first, you know, first movie they didn't want to start. I think it goes back to the Kelvin, because I think that he originally wanted to destroy the Enterprise right off the bat to, you know, to explain why it looks more like a hot rod than the original Constitution.
I can see that. I mean, yeah, I guess that you make a good point in that we don't really know what the original intent was and maybe what some of the designs look like before CBS, Paramount said you can do this but you can't do that. I mean they might have been the force behind. I mean, and it kind of goes to, again, you know, whose idea was it to have the Arrowhead insignia on the Kelvin? You know, maybe, who knows, maybe right. Someone had an idea that would have been different, but someone at Paramount said, no, this is a Star Trek, this is too visible, it's a Star Trek icon, you got to put the Arrowhead on the uniforms.
Right Yeah,
we would not know that, but so, you know, there are some other problems I have with the storyline. I guess I would have preferred, again, I guess thinking back of it on it, I would have preferred more of a straight reboot and had it start with Kirk and crew already in place. on the Enterprise versus going back to, you know, them being younger.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that's it for the bad things on the first movie.
And I have some of the same issues as you. Like, when I originally watched the movie, the ship design, the interior just confused the heck out of me. Like like I said, with when Kirk goes to find Uhura, and it looks like they're down in the engine room, but there's just like these workstations where she's a communications specialist, so I don't see why she'd be stuck down in the engine room. But the other thing is when they're all running to the bridge, and they round a corner and go through a set of doors, and then they're automatically on the bridge. It's like, it's like the design made no sense.
Well, if the ship really was five times the size of the, you know, original Enterprise, there probably would have been room to fit a little corridor inside the bridge module.
That's true, but it's just, you know.
That's
one thing I wish, you know, you have your you know, I wouldn't even have like on the two sets of, or even three sets of turbo lifts, but you know, the bridge is usually the top of the ship, right?
Yeah.
So I mean.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. In general, I think the interiors of the ship were just way too vast for what. It's for that, for what it should have been.
Right,
so.
Yeah. And when they're like, I guess it'd be the center of the saucer section. There's just those empty wells. It looks like with like bridges across them that, you know, and I think it's Into Darkness that, you know, Scotty and Kirk's hanging on to. And it's like, it felt more like either the Death Star or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you. The scale for me, I don't like the scale of things in this universe. But
then there's those pictures, you know, because on the edge of the saucer section, there should be like two or three decks, and there's close up of photos of those, and that's how many. It's almost like the scale's right there, but it's wrong in other places.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, there's a close up of them. Where it would show that the main saucer at the edge has two decks, which is more in line with, you know, the prime timeline ships. But then yeah, if you look at other angles of like, particularly the shuttle bay, it would suggest the ship is like, you know, five times bigger than that, and which would have, you'd have four decks on the saucer, edge of the saucer. So it's a little disappointing that from a design aspect that, you know, they didn't put a little more thought into that.
Right.
Other things that you really didn't like about the, and we're just still talking about the first movie.
Just the first movie. I didn't like, I guess, how emotional Spock was.
Okay, I get that.
I can understand dealing with the death of your mother, but even that didn't line up with the relationship with his father, and his mother didn't line up really with, I guess, the original timeline. I don't see how, you know, the Narada would have affected Vulcan culture that much. Because he went to Starfleet, but he basically had a falling out with his parents.
Yeah.
But I guess it didn't, even at the risk, like the original series, the risk of his father's death, he was putting the mission of the Enterprise before that of his family, and him being so emotional, I guess, at the loss of his mother, just didn't line up with the.
I have to say that didn't bother me as much, because I guess what I'm thinking about with that is, number one, he's a lot younger than we saw him in TOS, and you know, which would account for some of that. I mean, you can assume he's you know, because they you know, obviously he's he's half human, half Vulcan, and we've right. seen him struggle with his emotions in TOS. That so that might be more of a challenge for him. And also, if you look at the cage, he had more emotion in the cage that came later. So you could That's almost
true. Yeah.
It does match that a little more. So
okay. I'll let that pass then.
That's a valid point. I'd agree with you that it's jarring. Like, I remember that when watching it too, it was jarring. And it wasn't until later that I kind of thought, oh, okay, well, maybe it does make sense. And that's, you know, but.
Yeah, I guess he would have been about the same age as he was, like, during the cage.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so good things. I mean, number one, the Star Trek 09, I thought by far was the best. Kelvin movie.
This is where we disagree.
Okay. All right, that's okay. As a movie, like, forget this. If you take out the Star Trek geeky stuff, as a movie, I enjoyed it. I thought it was the best one in terms. So the story, the characters, the level of humor was perfect. As an action movie, I thought it was good. It was fun. I do give them big props for the casting for the most part. So I thought they did really well with casting these characters with new actors.
Right.
Chris Pine, I think, is great. Zachary Quinto, his Spock is his own interpretation, but I like it. I'm not recalling the name, but the gentleman who plays Leonard McCoy, I think, is like spot on. Like he just
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban's great. Simon Pegg. I think it's just definitely more of a comic oriented Scotty. I think it treads the line between kind of camp and not, but I think it works.
Well, I think even in the original series, I think there was a lot of times when Scotty was the comic relief.
Yeah, no, you're right. So yeah, I mean the casting, I think is fantastic. Yeah. I think they were great with that.
I loved Pike. I mean, even though he didn't play that big of a role, well, in the first one he did, but I'm having a blank on the actor's name, but he's a great actor. I loved him in National Treasure. The Nicolas Cage movie where he played the president. Oh, yeah.
No, I know. Yeah, I used to be able to recall names of actors and easily. It's mm-hmm. It's getting harder in my old age.
Yeah, I understand.
But yeah, so as a movie, I thought it was the best one. Just from that aspect of it. So.
Oh, and I loved Winona Ryder as Spock's mother. I thought
oh, yeah.
that she did a yep. she's not in many movies anymore, but yeah, I mean, I thought she did.
Oh, that reminds me, I guess the whole plot point about Vulcan being destroyed, that to me was the biggest plot point that really jarred me in that movie, was Vulcan being destroyed. Like that felt huge to me. Like, just wow.
Yeah. That's always the case when you're recording something, you forget facts, but the planet where Spock Prime was stranded and Scotty was working in that station, that was the same name as the planet as in Where No Man Has Gone Before.
That I didn't catch.
Yeah, I can't think of the planet name, but yeah, it was the same exact same name as that planet. But on that one, it was more like a temperate/desert. It looked like, because it was just like a refinery matte painting in the original series, and here it was an ice planet located in close proximity to Vulcan.
I'm looking it up. It is.
Da, da, da.
There we go. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can never remember. When I'm talking on geek stuff at work, where, you know, people don't care, I can recall all this stuff just off the top of my head. But, you know, when it's crunch time, yeah, I just draw a complete blank.
I'm on memory alpha. Jeez. Wow, the entry for this is just... Okay, Delta Vega.
It was Delta Vega. That's it, yes.
All right, I clicked on Delta Vega. Let's see. Does it mention? Are you sure?
Yeah. Oh, I'm 100% positive. It's the same planet. But
I don't see it talking about. Oh no, you're right. Here we go. Da-da-da.
Boom.
It is the same one. Okay.
Yeah. So that was a kind of a issue I had with it, because, you know, that was near the Great Galactic Barrier, I guess, you know, and then
it was way out there.
Yeah. And then because where they were going to strand Gary Mitchell, but, mm-hmm. And then, here it's like close proximity. And I guess you could have two planets in different systems with the same name. But
it's possible they may have just picked the name and they didn't realize it was actually used before.
I think J.J. Abrams probably picked it as a nod to the original series, but it just didn't make sense to me. Other than that, for 2009, I guess I don't have too many issues, other than probably the ones you've mentioned.
Okay.
But you want to move on to like the other movies, or?
Yeah, let's go to. You have time?
Well, we're probably around an hour 50.
An hour and 50 minutes?
Yeah.
Folks, this is
No, I'm sorry. We're at an hour 25, I'm sorry.
All right. I think we may just have a long podcast.
No, that's fine. We can
people want to listen to a long podcast, they need to listen to Trek Talk. We are Star Trek Talk Radio. And we only come out
where we talk week. About a lot but don't recall much of it.
I think we finish it out. I don't have much to say about Into Darkness, because I only saw it once, and I did not have the desire ever to watch it again.
Oh, really? See, I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I loved him in Sherlock, and I don't like what they did to the Khan character, I guess. I didn't have too many issues with the movie. I guess the main issue is how much they relied on the Wrath of Khan, the role reversals, yes. And the death scene, and then bringing Kirk back with Khan's blood, and the use of the Tribble, which. Goes back to what you said, Kirk's not a superhero. Well, if he's got Khan's blood in him now, technically he kind of is.
I saw it once. I don't mean to say I didn't enjoy it. I didn't have fun with it.
Right.
You know, I thought it was a good, it was a good action movie. It was,
yeah, the action scenes were great. The chase scene at the end was really well. I like the introduction of the Klingons.
Issue with it was, well, Star Trek II, come on, it's my favorite Star Trek movie. Khan is a great villain. He's one of the greatest villains, not only in Star Trek, but, you know, I would say even in movie history.
Right.
So, you know, I. I like Benedict Cumberbatch as well, but I don't think he fit. He was not the right. I don't think the casting was right for that.
You know? I mean, Khan was. I mean, he was a more like a. He was an Indian warlord.
Yeah.
I think it actually was well, I mean, he didn't in the series. He didn't have the beard or the turban, but I think he was a Sikh.
Yes, he was a Sikh.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I think that role, I mean, Ricardo Montalban owned that role, and I think it kind of did a little disservice. I think they could have done a good movie by giving the character another name, you know.
I would have read a whole other new movie, just a different. My biggest problem with it is. You had the first movie. It set it up, you know. It ended with, you know, Kirk in place as the captain. They did this, you know. They had this idea to relaunch Star Trek the way they did within, you know, the universe. Mm-hmm. You know, start the second one. I was hoping, you know, they're going to be out there. They're going to be exploring. They're going to be getting into it. And we got a movie where, you know, number one, they're back at Earth. They're not out. Exploring the final frontier.
Well, actually, it starts off on the planet where they're trying to stop the active volcano.
That was the teaser of the movie.
Yes, basically. Yes, and the Enterprise is under the water. That was a cool scene where it came out, but it didn't make sense.
I would have preferred to see more of that out there exploring, you know. And but they're back at Earth. They I don't know why go, but they go back to Star Trek 2 and retell the story. I just don't get it. They could have done so many other things. So that was my biggest issue with it. They just didn't take advantage of what they had, and I didn't like the tone of it. With, you know, you got the evil Starfleet admiral, and
yeah,
to me, it just does not.
I did not like the USS Vengeance at all.
Yeah,
the design did not make sense. I mean, especially it's like a big cargo hold with a little hatch in it. I mean, shouldn't they have a bigger door for loading cargo?
I gotta rewatch it. I just remember, again, that ship must have been as big as a freaking Superstar Destroyer from, you know, it just.
Yeah. I don't think that ship made any sense.
So I didn't.
How could Admiral Marcus, I mean, Starfleet is overseen by the United Federation of Planets. How could Admiral Marcus have this secret organization where they're actually, granted, I understand it's Section 31, but how could they not know that the ship is being built?
I know. It just goes against the philosophy of Star Trek, and I just, again, from just a creative choices that were made with this film to actually, you know, if you're gonna go back and redo Star Trek II, you better be 100% confident that you got your stuff together and you're gonna deliver something great, you know. You're going to go back and kind of flip, do a role reversal and recreate some iconic scenes from Star Trek II, particularly the death of Spock. You better have your stuff together.
Right.
And the other, you know, the two is like, it wasn't ready. Right. I mean, it's this, that Star Trek II, the death of Spock, it worked. It was great because of the history of these characters. Right.
Mm hmm.
They were older. The theme of getting older, friendship. They had the history. These characters didn't have that history yet. They're in the reboot movies. So it didn't work on an emotional level. It just didn't seem true on an emotional level. They weren't that good of friends yet.
Yeah, and it's actually from a deleted scene. I don't know if you know about this, and I clicked on the wrong button, But there is an admiral. There's in the deleted scene of Star Trek Into Darkness, there is a deleted scene in Admiral Marcus's office where, you know how I had all the models of the different ships behind his desk? He had the NX-01 and a Vengeance and a few other ships.
I don't remember.
Well, you need to rewatch it. But there's a deleted scene where it's looking down, I guess, from the ceiling. And there, I guess from the ceiling, there is a original series Constitution class ship.
Okay.
And it's I'm looking at a picture. I can't make out the name of it, but it's NCC 0718. And
this doesn't make sense.
Yeah. If you do a Google search for Constitution class Admiral Marcus's office, you can bring up pictures. But that didn't make sense. I can see why they cut the scene, but what was their thinking of putting it in there in the first place?
It doesn't fit at all.
Yeah. So other than that, I think that's my main issue with Star Trek Into Darkness.
All right. Yeah, I will rewatch it. I'll put that on the list.
We had to watch it together and take notes.
Well, you know what I want to do? I want to do a commentary track on something.
Okay. Well, we could do it on like the new movies.
We can do it on anything. I mean, yeah. we might want to start on an episode just to kind of see how it goes. It's a shorter thing to do.
Okay.
You know, but I want to do the movies. I wouldn't mind. Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be a lot of fun. All right, Star Trek Beyond.
Now this is my favorite of all three movies. I think Star Trek Beyond caught the spirit of the original series with the interaction with the crew. How when the crew split up, like Kirk and Chekhov and McCoy and Spock and Scotty and Jayla, the interaction, especially the scene where at the beginning of the movie when McCoy and Kirk are in the lounge,
yeah,
having a drink to celebrate his father, and how they have three glasses. I thought that that caught the spirit of the original series very well.
I agree on that part, the beginning part. Yep.
I didn't have very many issues with this movie. I liked how they paid tribute to kind of like Enterprise, talking about the Makos and, you know, how they disbanded once United Federation planets came into being, because they were more of an exploration service and not so much military. I wasn't too sure about the USS Franklin. I was hoping it was going to be more of a NX class, but the design didn't really fit into the prime timeline, I didn't think, especially with the big window in front, because
all JJ verse starships need to have the big window. Yeah. Even the Kelvin had it, and that was supposed to be prime timeline.
That's true. And I didn't like how it did have the orange bursars, nacelle bursars in the front. Yeah, I never could get into the blue of the other ships.
Okay.
But
I actually didn't mind the Franklin design. I kind of like small ships. I don't like the front window, but I think overall I don't mind the design.
Yeah. Yeah, overall, I mean, I think it's a great looking ship. I bought the big when the DVD came out or Blu-ray came out. I bought the set that actually came with the USS Franklin, and no, I love the design of the ship. Just minor things, mainly the big window. I like how Justin Lin, you know, basically it was a tribute to his father. Whose name's Frank Lynn. So
okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was assuming, you know, Benjamin Franklin somehow. I don't know.
No. On the hall, it looks like Franklin, like
okay. know,
Benjamin Franklin. But on the dedication plaque, in it, there's a bigger space between Frank and Lynn.
Okay.
So it, yeah, it's very subtle, but
okay. All right, I get that. So you,
I, and yeah, and
I, what did I, you think I, of the story though?
I thought it was a good story. I like the Yorktown. I didn't see very many things wrong with the story.
All right.
What were your issues? And I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Okay. So, I thought the best part of the movie was the big, I don't know, the first 10 or 15 minutes and then the last 5 minutes.
Wow.
But to your point, I like some of the pieces that you mentioned. So, like, you know, so the beginning with this, I think it was an opening scene with Kirk with the down with whatever, I forget the who he was talking to, but he was
the diplomatic mission.
Yeah. I thought that was fun. Like, okay, like I would have loved a movie based on more of that.
Yeah.
Because that scene reminded me of a fun episode of TOS.
That scene reminded me of Galaxy Quest.
Okay. Well, Galaxy Quest is an honorary Trek movie.
Yeah.
We just watched that at home a couple days ago, by the way. Megan liked it.
That's
good. But yeah, I like that, and I like the bar scene with McCoy. Yeah. I agree, that was great. Like that was def TOS, kind of harking back to Star Trek II. The Kirk and McCoy scene in Star Trek II. Yeah.
I also liked how, speaking of that diplomatic scene, when he beams back to the ship and they're walking through the corridor, he mentions, I ripped my shirt again.
Yeah. I did like the callbacks and the original series. I liked the ending because it was, again, it was kind of all about the crew, the relationships, you know, the get together that they had in the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I just felt the story as a movie, the story was weak. And particularly the villain. What was his name?
Krull.
Krull.
Wait, I can't think of the Starfleet captain's name Krull was before.
The funny name, is it like Balthazar or something? Kinda.
Yeah, something like that.
Let me look it up so we can. Star Trek Beyond. Cast. All right. It says Krall, but okay. I thought it was
Captain. I think I have Balthazar. I think. I'll. You go. Right. You go ahead. Well, and you could go ahead and tell. Your issues, and I'll look it up real fast.
All right. So my main issue was basically him as an antagonist. His motivations were just not clear to me at all. I didn't understand why this guy was so mad at the Federation.
Okay, I got it. Balthazar Edison.
Yeah. I just didn't get it. This guy's motivation. Why was he so pissed off at the Federation? Okay, his ship got lost in space. Okay, well, you're going to want to destroy the whole Federation because of that? You know, they didn't really go into, you know, how he got to be on this planet and this just who was this? What was the alien species and why did he turn into what he was? What happened to his crew? It really goes back to the motivation. I mean, if you're gonna have a story like this where it's about a villain, you need some more motivation. I compare to Khan too. It's like, okay, we understood Khan's motivation. It was very clear.
Right.
And this guy, I just didn't get it. I didn't, you know, so that was the biggest, piece for me that I just thought was off. I mean, I couldn't get behind this guy. I didn't understand it. And so, I guess some minor issues. I could have gone without destroying the Enterprise again. Just, I didn't think it was necessary. I mean, maybe in the context of this film, it was necessary to get him to the planet, but
right. Yeah. I think another reason they destroyed it was they wanted to redesign it for future movies.
And that's not a good enough reason. The Star Trek, the Enterprise is a character. It just should be as important as anything else.
No, I mean,
you got a disposable Enterprise now. It's like, got destroyed. They're going to get a new Enterprise. Where's, you know, so, again, they talk about the scaling. I don't like the scaling in this movie of the technology and the ships and the Yorktown. Again, to me, this is a huge station. I mean, this is Star Wars technology to me. I mean, that thing is huge. It's the size of a Death Star. I mean,
oh, I think it's bigger than a Death Star.
I mean, the Enterprise docks with it, and it's going through this little tunnel. It's gargantuan. And I just, to me, like, the technology to be able to build something so massive, I never got the sense that that was the technology level that the Federation was at.
I had no issue with the scale. I thought the scenes on the Yorktown, especially when they are docking and they do the flyby of like the buildings and how it's designed, I thought it was great because it reminded me of those the artwork from the 1970s of what people thought, you know, the future held.
Yeah.
The big spheres or the big rings that had, you know, soil and atmosphere.
Right. No, I don't. I like it as a design. I think in another science fiction movie, it would be great. I just don't think it fits the Star Trek aesthetic and the Star Trek technological level that we've seen. I don't know. And again, I guess when I go back to the Enterprise as a character, something so large seems to diminish the Enterprise itself that it just bothers me somehow. It's kind of hard to explain it, but
the space Starbase One in orbit on Earth on the original movies, I mean, that was huge. And then there was another Starbase in the Next Generation that was even bigger because it had to hold the Enterprise space, D.
They're big, but they're still nowhere near the size of the Yorktown. I mean, it's so, that thing's the size of a small moon.
Yeah. And the one thing I guess I didn't agree on the rationale in the movie was why they had built the Yorktown, because, you know, they didn't want it, like, the Federation didn't want to show favoritism to any specific planet, so they didn't have a planet-based, you know, star base. But that doesn't make sense, because even in the original, almost every member of the Federation had like a star base on it, like an embassy or whatever you want to call them.
Well, yeah, most of the star bases that you saw on TOS were planet based star bases.
Yeah, so the rationale for Yorktown, even, I mean, they could have just said it was, you know, a star base that, because it was like one of the furthest, from what I gathered from the movie, it was like one of the furthest it's out there, because, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing that I heard complaints about it, if it's like they're on their 5-year mission and they're like further than they've ever gone before, and yet when they get there, Sulu's family's there waiting on him.
Yeah. I guess I would give them a pass on that, just because we've seen that before. Like time scale in terms of travel time has never been consistent in Star Trek. We could probably do another show on that. Yeah, right? I mean, it's you're far away when it's convenient to be far away, and your subspace message has to take a week. But then when it's convenient that you have to get back to Earth, you can get back there in a matter of days.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in TOS and TNG. So.
And the Enterprise probably never, you know, they don't take a direct route anywhere. They go where, you know, sensor readings take them. Where yeah. I guess if, you know, Sulu's family knew they were going to, you know, be at Star or the Yorktown, I guess you could probably get a Federation shuttle from Earth directly to Yorktown in a few weeks.
Yep.
So,
and so yeah. To me, it was mostly in the issue I had with the motivation and the antagonist, which just kind of felt flat. But it had definitely had some good pieces. Oh, I really loved the one Spock. So the you know, they tied in Leonard Nimoy's you know passing with Spock dying in universe. You know, Spock Prime dying in universe. And then I actually have that picture that they showed.
Right.
I have that. I have that exact same one I picked up from a convention back in the 80s.
Signed.
I love that part. So, yeah, it's got some great parts. I would say the parts that are good in this movie are the best Star Trek in all three. So, unfortunately for me, the whole movie didn't have it. But so can I give you my summary on just the Star Trek, just overall my thoughts on Kelvin universe?
Go for it.
We have 5 minutes.
Yeah, we have 5 minutes.
And I'll let you. So number one is, again, I give it props for bringing Star Trek back. We needed that. We probably wouldn't be, you know, waiting for Star Trek Discovery without these movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they are most, you know, for the most part, the movies are fun. They've done great with the characters and the casting. To be fair, my overall criticism of the movies are the same criticisms I have for a lot of the Star Trek movies, particularly the TNG era, in that Star Trek to me is more of a TV show. It doesn't work best in a movie setting, because in a movie setting, you're almost as a given. You kind of have to have that antagonist plot line and also an action movie element to it. And that, to me, that's not Star Trek. And that's inherent with these movies. You know, they've all had, you know, a major villain to drive the story. And I don't think they succeeded in most cases. And then if you look at what I believe are the best Star Trek movies, you had Star Trek II, which did have a villain, but again, my opinion is Khan is up there as the top villains ever in movie history. So that they get a pass on that. Star Trek III, basically, I guess you'd call it a minor villain. You know, you had Commander Cruz, but he was not the A plot of the story.
Right.
Star Trek IV did not have a villain in the truest sense. And those are the best, you know, original series movies. The movies that had problems relied on a villain. Star Trek V, 6 in some respects. The next generation movies, and again, I think you can break them out as well. You know, the best Next Generation movie had a fantastic villain, The First Contact. With the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
And the others, they didn't. So that's my thoughts on the movies so far. Now, my last thought is I love the comics. Like, the comics that come out of these movies I think are great because they have more of that series feel where they have more time to have the character arc and the stories, which is more like the series. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, I think Mike Johnson and the writing on the IDW comics are superior to the movies. That's it. I'm done.
I wish I like that comic. I mean, I read quite a bit of the Star Trek ongoing before it became Star Trek Boldly Go. I wish they would write some novels in the Kelvin universe.
So they haven't been any, right?
They did when 2009 came out, but they were more like young adult, teen young adult, and it was basically Starfleet Academy. Not including the novelization of the movies, which they did a novelization for Star Trek 2009 and Star Trek Into Darkness, but I don't think they did a novelization for Star Trek Beyond.
So check this out. Go ahead and listen to that latest episode of the official Star Trek podcast with David Mack. So David Mack and three other authors were actually commissioned to write JJ verse novels,
mm-hmm.
and it was the top ones. It was David Mack, I think, Michael Jan Friedman, Alan Dean Foster, and I forget the other. But they were the top Star Trek writers. They were paid, and they did complete the manuscripts.
Oh, really?
Those novels, and they, for whatever reason, they don't understand why themselves, they were never released.
Oh, wow!
And they said they probably never will be. So that was, yeah, that's weird. But but anyway.
Yeah. Well, I understand in regards to the three Kelvin universe movies. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I guess movie audiences today, I mean, that's what they want. They want action. They go for special effects and action. I mean that's why Marvel movies do so well. Comic book movies in general do well. It's all about actions and special effect. As for the prime movies, my two favorite are The Wrath of Khan and The Undiscovered Country. And I mean, The Undiscovered Country didn't really have a villain in and of itself, other than, you know, the conspiracy to sabotage the Kittimer Accords. But I mean, it was basically problem solving. It was, you know, what happened, who did it, and how are we going to solve it without going to war? It had a great supporting cast. I mean, it had, I think Christopher Plummer did a great job as Counselor Gorkon. And Christopher Plummer was Chang. I'm sorry.
Christopher Plummer was Chang.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I can't remember the actor who played Gorkon.
Christopher Warner. No, it's Warner.
I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, I mean, it had a great supporting cast, and I mean that's. It's right up there with Wrath of Khan for me. I could watch those two movies anytime, but for the Kelvin universe, I mean, overall, I love it. Just because it's Star Trek. I mean, at its heart, I mean, even though it's a little, it's different in ways from what we grew up with, it's in the end, it's still Star Trek. It's still the Federation, and there's some things I wish they try to keep closer to the Prime universe, especially the phasers. I never liked the flip around barrels on the phaser because phasers had multiple settings, not just, you know, stun and kill. I mean, you could use them for, I mean, there are more tools in the series. There were tools that could be used as weapons.
Yes.
So, overall, I'm looking forward. And as far as what I've read, Star Trek IV is a go. And from what I've read, that Chris
Pine,
not Chris Pine,
Chris
Helmsworth is coming back as George Kirk. And rumors I've heard is that supposedly, obviously, if he's coming back, it's probably going to be some kind of time travel storyline, and it's supposedly supposed to get it back to the Prime universe. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of rumor. I don't think it's been greenlit.
Sorry.
I don't think the movie's been greenlit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, apparently, what was going to be the storyline for Star Trek 3, they're going to use parts of it for Star Trek 4. That's another rumor.
Oh, cool.
So.
Yeah. Well. We'll see. I guess my thought is, Yeah, I guess that's enough for now. I think
we're getting close to 2 hours now. So,
I see episodes focusing on one movie per episode discussion.
Yeah,
I think that'd be fun to start with the first one, TMP, and kind of go from there. And who knows, maybe do the commentary on one of those.
But, oh yeah, that'd be fun.
All right. It's probably time to wrap this up.
Okay.
So, wrap
on episode 2. And hopefully, Garen and I will discuss, and we're probably going to. What I would like to do is, have a set time. I think maybe sometime during the weekday would probably work best for me, but where we have a set time and people can get on Twitter, and I can follow the Twitter feed if people want to. Jump in and, ask questions, put their 2 cents in, and we can acknowledge those and see what other people are saying. I think that'd be fun also.
I guess we should talk about, you mentioned Twitter. Do you have a Twitter account set up?
No, I thought you set one up.
No, I did not set up a Twitter account.
Well, we'll set up a Twitter, Trek Talk, Twitter account. I know I've set up a Facebook account. We have a Trek Talk podcast at gmail.com email. So we have a YouTube. We have we're getting there. We're becoming a professional podcast.
Got a professional operation going on here. Now, so, so in Twitter you can have a website. I do have the website as my website under my Twitter handle.
Okay.
So I guess. So our website is trektalk.blue. It's blue. You would call it blueberry, but it's spelled blubrry.com. So trektalk.blubrry.com. From there, you can download the episodes. It also has links to subscribe on iTunes, Android, Google Play, subscribe by email. My personal contact information, this is Garen, is garen.gillum@yahoo.com. And my Twitter handle is @Garen_Gillum. Or you can just search for my name, Garen Gillum, GaaronGillham. And the Trek Talk email is trektalkpodcast@gmail.com. And your email, John?
While you're talking, I was trying to think which one I wanted to use. I guess
it's the one that's posted, by the way.
Which one is that? I can't remember.
The one you gave me. It's jralley1701@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's okay. That's the one. That's the one I wanted to use. Are
you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's I think it's just John_Alley.
All right.
Yeah, @John_Alley. It's JOHN_ALLEY.
All right. That's pretty sad that we're not even following each other on Twitter.
That is sad. I'm not on Twitter very often. The most time I'm active on Twitter is during the election debates.
Oh. I thought I'd try to get out there. It's actually been a lot of fun. I kind of enjoy it. I resisted Twitter for a long time, but I decided to get on there specifically for the show, just to see if I could get some things out. I've got 35 followers, so I'm pretty.
Oh, really?
I'm ecstatic.
Talk for a minute. Let me see what I've got. I don't.
You know what I like about Twitter? it's kind of you can follow your favorite creators.
Oh yeah.
And I just love following the creators and being able to say, hey, Mike, you know, Mike Johnson, Star Trek Boligo number 4. Awesome. You know?
Yeah.
I just find that pretty cool. So,
and sometimes, you know what the craziest thing is that ever happened to me on Twitter? I did not follow this person. I wasn't really following. I mean, I followed a few famous people, but all of a sudden it popped up that David Hasselhoff was following me.
David Hasselhoff.
It was like, I don't know what happened, but hey, you know. Hold on. It's asked me to put in some information real fast. But it is, I was correct. It is at John_Alley for Twitter.
Okay.
So I have 86 followers.
Okay. You're up there then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should be out there posting the Trek Talk podcast.
Well, I will. I recently updated my, cover photo and my, my photo. I had one that was probably close to, 10 years old.
So yes, you can also, you can comment on our website. We'd love to hear from you on Twitter, all from our, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 listeners. So see.
Yeah.
We've had 25 downloads on our statistics, John. So I'm pretty happy about that. Now, well, I don't know how many of those are real people or are they.
Well, are one they, of the, let's say 24, because one of those was me, because I subscribed on iTunes, not because I like to listen to myself. Just it's more for quality issues.
I'll admit I listened to our first entire show. I a couple of those are mine. I think I downloaded it to test it, and then I subscribed on my email to test it.
Okay.
And then subscribed.
So we at least have 20, and we were just picked up by what feed?
Player FM. Yeah, Player FM, which is a popular Android podcast app, just pulled us in. Automatically, I guess they tie into various. They must have tied into Blueberry,
okay,
and pulled us down. And oh, and I know I want to give a shout out to a couple listeners, my parents-in-law, I guess you would say. I want to say hi to Mark and Linda. They said they loved the show. They listened to our entire 3.5-hour show or whatever it was. Driving down from Virginia to North Carolina.
Oh, so, wow. Well, so, thanks for listening.
Yeah. Our friend Ashley from our RPG, she also tuned in. So if you're listening.
She started talking back to us.
Oh, yes.
So which is a good thing. I mean, I want this to be like, you know, just, you know, you're sitting down with a couple friends just that love Star Trek, and that's the feeling I want. And I took that as a great compliment.
I did as well. And speaking of that, I think we'd like to bring in some people, some of our friends, bring them into the show, talk, maybe, you know, maybe, I know Ashley, I think her favorite series was Voyager. Maybe we watch a Voyager episode, talk about Voyager.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think we want to do some commentaries on episodes and our movies coming up. More to come on Star Trek Discovery. So thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time on Trek Talk.
All right.